Returning a phone call?
Yes. This is Jeffrey Hill. Who am I speaking with?
Steve Storti, S-T-O-R-T-I.
Oh, sir, yeah. Thanks for calling me back. The reason I was calling you is because, I was reading on the internet that you seen the plane at the Pentagon on 9/11?
Yes.
Okay, the only reason I was calling is because I read this stuff on the internet, have you seen,
all
the...
You're saying that there's no plane that hit the Pentagon, it was a missile.
No, I'm not saying that.
No, I know, but that's what they say.
Yeah, exactly, that's what they say. Right, so I just wanted to, talk to someone that's seen it with their own eyes, kind of thing.
Okay, that plane followed Route 95, 395 actually, right into the Pentagon, just like it was following a AAA map. It was definitely a U.S., an American Airlines plane. I knew it because I had flown maybe 60 times the year before.
Yeah.
It was out of the flight path. I lived right there in Crystal City overlooking the West Lot. I was on my balcony less than a quarter of a mile. I heard it bank. I heard the engines rev. I saw it hit. I felt, smelt, and tasted the explosion and lived with the aftermath for months afterwards. I promise you, it was a fucking plane and not a cruise missile or anything else.
Okay, I believe you. But, I don't mean to laugh at, a serious thing, but it's just...
No, I understand.
But, how far did you see it come in from?
I saw about the last 7 seconds of the flight.
So, where, could you, kind of... with looking where the Navy Annex is and the roads and
if you look at the Navy, if you looking from above and you're looking at the Navy Annex and you look at the Pentagon, and you make a triangle, my apartment would have been approximately in line between the Navy Annex and Reagan National Airport. So it made a triangle. If you want to draw a compass line, you could look from my balcony directly over the Navy Annex and see the flagpole at Henderson Hall, which is just above the Navy Annex. It's the Marine Corps base. If you shift your gaze a degree to the left, you'd be looking directly at the Sheraton, or what was the Sheraton National Hotel.
These guys that said, they talked to witnesses and stuff. They went down to Arlington or whatever, and they talked to some people, and they describe it I don't know if you know where that Citgo gas station is. Or was?
Yep, I know exactly where it is.
And
little hollow right below the Navy Annex. The plane would have passed almost directly overhead.
Overhead of that Citgo gas station?
Yep, if that's the one that I'm thinking of.
Okay. It's now the Navy Annex station or something like that, or I don't know what the name is.
Probably.
Okay, and so it would have came right over that? I talked to a guy that was in the Navy Annex at the time. His office isn't there anymore. They tore it down for the memorial. And he said when he was in his office, if he saw it come over his right shoulder.
Depending on where he was sitting and what direction he was facing, that would have been possible. But it didn't come over his right shoulder. If he was in the Navy Annex...
Mm-hmm.
It didn't come over the Navy Annex. It went between the Navy Annex and the Pentagon.
Between the Navy Annex and the Pentagon.
Right. Maybe one wing went over it, but...
More towards which side? The road side or where the Arlington Cemetery side?
More towards the road side.
More towards the road side.
Right. It came in... If you're looking at a map of that area, an overhead map, see if you can... If you can pull up an aerial map, and you'll see 395. That plane followed 395 right in.
Okay, okay.
Except when the road turns to the right to go around the Pentagon and then over the bridge into D.C., the plane went straight. When I first saw the plane, my heart sank because I thought it was going for the Lincoln Memorial.
Okay, okay. Yeah, because what, like I was going to say is, there's these guys that say, well, they went down and they interviewed people, a couple people from the Citgo gas station, a couple Pentagon police officers and stuff, and they were saying, oh, the plane flew north of the Citgo. This is where all their thing relies on. They said the plane was north of the Citgo, therefore it's impossible to have done the damage to the light poles, and it couldn't have hit the Pentagon.
In order for that plane at its altitude to fly north of the Citgo station, it would have hit the Navy annex.
Oh, yeah? That's interesting.
The Citgo station is located in a hollow below the Navy annex.
Okay, yeah, like
You really need to look at an aerial map or a topographic map. It's in a hollow. The Navy Annex, the foundation for the sub-basement, is probably 20 feet above the highest part of the Citgo station.
Okay. So the... Okay, I see what you mean. Like, I do have a vague understanding of that area. Like, I just started looking at it. But yeah, like, from where you place it, that seems like the same as... from other people I've talked to, more or less.
The only way that... there's no way physically possible, unless you can bend the laws of physics, that plane could have come in from any other direction, because the angle would have been too wrong and it wouldn't have been able to hit the Pentagon when it was almost level with the ground.
And did you see it hit any of the light poles, or...?
I saw some puffs of what I thought was dust at the time, and that was probably the light poles.
You wouldn't have happened to seen that taxi cab on the highway, would you?
No.
No?
From my vantage point, anything below 10 feet on the ground, I couldn't see.
Okay, okay.
So I didn't see the cars that were on the road. I could see the top of the Citgo station. I could see the top of the light poles. I could clearly see the Pentagon because it was far enough out from 395. I saw that plane come in, and I saw it pass between me and the Navy Annex. And the only way for it to get in there is for it to have flown almost directly over the Citgo station.
And you said if you triangulate the area where you were in an apartment?
Yes, on the fourth floor of an apartment building.
Like
at South Eads, 15th and South Eads.
15th and South Eads?
South Eads Street. South Eads Street is one of the two roads that went directly into the west lot at the Pentagon.
Okay. Okay. Because, okay, and so, like...
Actually, it's 14th Street.
Just hypothetically speaking, then, from, like, where you've seen all this happen, even though, like, you know 100% that you saw it hit, just hypothetically speaking, from what they say, oh, people were deceived into thinking they saw it hit, but in actuality, the plane flew over and the explosion masked the flyover. If a Boeing 757...
No, and I'm going to tell you why. Because if you were standing on your front doorstep and you live on a straight street and your neighbors have houses with attached garages, if you look down the street, you could see your neighbor pull into his garage and the car would kind of look like it was disappearing into the house. Correct?
Right. Okay. I follow. Yeah.
Okay. I watched that plane hit the Pentagon. I saw the puff of dust when it actually hit. There was no immediate explosion. I saw that plane slice into the Pentagon until the tail fin was even with the outside wall, and that is when the explosion occurred.
Yeah, wow, that's interesting. So, like, and you're a pilot too, I read?
No.
Or no?
I'm an ex-Marine, but not a pilot. I was a retired firefighter, but not a pilot.
Oh, okay, sorry, I got you mixed up with somebody else. I've got information overload in my head. Would you say, though, like, the plane, it was very precise in the way it came in and hit? Like, it wasn't an accident or anything, you think?
I mean, no. This wasn't an accident, because its trajectory at the last minute changed. When it passed over, just the tip, the end of 395, and it went over the Citgo station, it banked sharply to the right. And I know this because I saw the left wing come up. And at the same time, the engines went to full throttle.
Okay. Yeah, because I was talking
about... It was deliberate. And I can tell you this. There were people on board that plane because I saw silhouettes huddled in the back windows of that plane, because where I first saw it,
yeah,
I could see through the plane from like the window on one side to the window of the other.
Uh-huh.
And in the front two-thirds of that plane, there was nothing but clear right through to the other side of the plane. And in the back of that plane, the back third, you could see things moving back and forth in front of the windows.
Oh, yeah? Huh. That's pretty interesting. Yeah, okay, well, I just... I don't want to take up any more of your time, sir.
No, I hope that answers all your questions. And I've read all the stupidity on the internet.
Are you?
I've had people tell me that I've been hypnotized.
Yeah.
or that I'm part of some government conspiracy.
Oh yeah. Anybody that says they saw the plane hit is part of the cover-up, eh? That's what I.
Well, and the fact that I would be part of any type of conspiracy goes against my basic character, and you could check that with anybody on damn near five continents.
Mm-hmm.
I also triangulated the size of the fireball after that blast, and it was in excess of 600 feet in diameter. And I did this getting a laser distance finder from my apartment to the west wall of the Pentagon, and knowing where I was standing and where the top of it was in reference to the edge of the balcony above me.
Mm-hmm.
And that fireball was in excess of 600 feet in diameter, and it was definitely jet fuel because it was as orange as a freaking pumpkin.
Yeah.
And then black. There was no white and no blue involved. And I was a firefighter for 23 years. I know fire.
So, like, would you say, I forget what I was going to say now. Sorry. Not to be rude or anything like that, but do you think we were told the whole truth about everything that happened on that day?
Of course not. I don't believe we were told the whole truth. I just read something yesterday that the government wants to pass new laws saying that they can take over the internet in an emergency.
Oh, yeah.
It's all part of the same stupidity.
The kill switch thing or whatever it was called?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's all. And if that happens, I'm out of here. If you laugh, I'm serious.
Well, I don't know.
Because I will not live in a society that's deftly controlled. After 9/11, I didn't defer from traveling. I spent 16 weeks in the UK. And I know that the degree to which our media is filtered here, most people have no idea.
Like the propaganda and the media kind of deal?
Well, not the propaganda, but what is just left out.
Oh, yeah.
Not that they add anything in, but they leave things out. Things which they probably feel would be too disruptive to society.
Yeah.
The day of 9/11, most of the European news stations showed several of the hundreds of people who jumped from the trade centers.
Mm-hmm.
You never saw one of them on American TV.
Mm-hmm. Do you think those towers came down because fire weakened the steel?
Yes.
Yeah?
And I say that based on being a firefighter, because I've seen warehouses with similar construction with unprotected I-beams that twisted and went down.
But like a total global collapse of the both of them? Like just, it seems like...
It wouldn't need to be a total global collapse. You only need, in pancake construction, you only need one floor to fail. Each floor is designed to hold itself up and hold a structure together. It's not designed to hold two floors. So when one fails, and you have a, let's just say it's one ton, you've got a floor designed to hold a ton and a half, and it's got a ton and a half load. And if the floor above it weighs a ton, and that floor lets go, now all of a sudden you've got a floor that's rated for a ton and a half holding 2.5 tons.
What about, like, the Building 7? You think that's the same thing, too?
No. Building 7, I have no explanation for. I've never really looked at it that closely. But when something that big comes down, and this wasn't reported much, but if you look at some of the seismographic data for the New York City area, New England in general, for that day, you will find that they did record tremors. The data on the size of it was never released, so I don't know what it was on a Richter scale. But it's possible that some of that residual damage from some of those surrounding buildings happened as a result of, you know, a million tons of steel and concrete hitting the ground.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, because I've talked to demolitions experts, and they said that there's no way it fell like that into its own footprint from fire.
But. Well, you know what? You gotta realize pancake construction, and don't talk to demolition experts because they know how to blow things up. You gotta talk to a construction expert and talk to them specifically about pancake construction techniques. And the fact that in pancake construction, the bulk of the load is carried by the exterior walls.
Well, what I found interesting was, like, when FEMA did their report, they said that the floor trusses were weakened, and they ripped apart from the center columns of the towers.
Yes.
And then when...
It happens. They twist. They don't rip apart. They twist.
But when then NIST came out with their conclusions, they were totally opposite of FEMA's conclusions, saying that the floor trusses held on to the core columns and brought them down. So they contradicted each other in their reports.
And that's a physical impossibility. And once again, you may need to talk to a physicist about that, or talk to any firefighter who's familiar with truss construction. And they will tell you that the first thing that goes in that type of construction, or any type of metal truss construction, which makes warehouses so dangerous, because vastly everything that was built prior to 9/11 was built unprotected, is that when it heats up, and it doesn't even have to heat up that much, the metal begins to fatigue at an accelerated rate, and the weak spots develop. And if you think of an I-beam, the structural strong points are where the top and the bottom column are welded to the center column. The weak spots are the center column right down the center, longitudinally. So when it heats up, the first thing that's going to give is going to be that flat plate between the top and the bottom plate. And it's not going to, like, sandwich, but what's going to happen is it weakens and it twists. When it twists, all that load that was being supported is no longer supported because the beam isn't straight anymore. So the full weight of that floor or roof comes to bear on the two end points.
Well, like, so you, like, you looked into, do you still look at any of the stuff about 9/11?
I read the 9/11 commission report.
Yeah.
Cover to cover. Twice. 90% of it is bullshit. To this day, I will never understand how a jet can fly off course for that amount of time in protected airspace and not be picked up. I will. In order for me to believe that, I have to believe that our entire military is nothing but a scam. And that's very, it's very possible, but you know what? If they can make a Predator drone that can take out a single car in the desert in Afghanistan while it's being controlled by somebody in either Virginia, Nevada, or California, I can't believe that they can't pick up a passenger jet flying like 40 yards above 395 for an excess of 15 miles.
Yeah, like you see all that stuff about Popular Mechanics saying that NORAD wasn't equipped to deal with any threats within North America.
Right, because everything at NORAD is designed to look outwards.
Yeah, well, I talked to a NORAD historian, and he said that that wasn't true. If they were alerted, they could intercept anywhere, whether it be...
You're right, if they were alerted, because what they have to do is they have to switch arrays, meaning they have to physically turn their radar in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. And if they weren't able to... like, and they had all those war games where they actually were having hijacked airliners exercises at the same time, and... they didn't know if it was real world or exercise, and they had all these fake blips along with the real blips and stuff.
And I think that's pretty much bullshit. And the reason why I know that is because, and this is strange, but it's true, 2 weeks before, and you can write this name down for verification, Dan Goodwin.
Dan Goodwin?
Dan Goodwin.
Uh-huh.
Was one of the administrators at the Sky Marshals program outside of Atlantic City in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks before 9/11, I contacted them to find out if they had any vacancies in the Air Marshal program. And we talked for maybe 30 minutes, and he explained to me that since President Carter was in and he cut back on everything, they weren't hiring anybody. As a matter of fact, as people retired, they just didn't replace them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I still had his number. Instantaneously, when that plane hit the Pentagon, my landline and my cell phone went dead. It took me 15 minutes to get a signal for my cell phone.
Really?
And I know now that that's because in times of national emergency, the government shuts all available lines to government use.
Right.
I was told that by somebody from the FBI. And
that's interesting.
I called Dan Goodwin, and they were in a panic there, and I got his secretary, and I said, I want to tell you guys that I just saw a plane hit the Pentagon. And she said, no, you're mistaken. That's the World Trade Center. I said, ma'am, I know the difference between the World Trade Center and the frickin' Pentagon. I just saw a 757 American Airlines, silver fuselage, red and blue striped, not humpback airliner hit the frickin' Pentagon. And she said, sir, you're really mistaken. There were two planes that hit the Pentagon and we're tracking another one in Pennsylvania. I said, ma'am, and at that point I heard somebody scream.
You mean two planes that hit the World Trade Center?
What's that?
She said two planes hit the World Trade Center.
Right, and they were tracking another one in Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
She said inbound to New York City. At that moment, somebody in the background screamed and said, oh my God, a plane just hit the Pentagon. At that point, the woman I was talking to was dumbstruck. And the next voice I heard moments later was Dan Goodwin, and he asked me to repeat everything I saw, and then he put me on with another secretary who transcribed everything. So the government didn't even know a plane hit the Pentagon for 20 minutes.
Well, did you hear what's his name's testimony? there's this guy, I forget, he was in the 9/11 hearings, and he's like, he heard some guy talking to Dick Cheney, and he said, sir, the plane's 20 miles out. Sir, the plane's 15 miles out. Sir, the plane's 10 miles out. Do the orders still stand? And Cheney whipped his head around and he said, of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything to the contrary?
Well, I don't trust Cheney. I never did. I think he is the Antichrist. I don't think there's any human being alive, the Bush family included, who benefited from 9/11 more than Dick Cheney and his buddies.
Yeah, for sure. It's like cui bono.
What I do know is that our government is largely inept due to the fact, and I'm going to say our military, due to the fact that it was basically taken over by civilians instead of left in the hands of the military.
Mm-hmm.
And you could trace that back to Korea and General MacArthur. That was the beginning of the demise of the American military, and the American military simply became an extension of our political system. However, I digress.
You think we're in a rough ride for the future? It looks like...
I don't know. I just came back from 12 days in the Middle East.
Oh, yeah?
And I can tell you this. First of all, people in the Middle East love Americans. They don't like America.
Yeah, okay, I understand what you're saying, yeah.
But, for the most part, and I was with 437 Iranians, for the most part, they worry about if they're going to have a job tomorrow, are they going to be able to educate their kids, and are they going to be able to put food on the table? They don't give two shits about uranium, nuclear reactors, what's going on in Afghanistan, or Iraq for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a vague interest in what's going on in the Middle East with Israel, but that's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
But the average person in the Middle East could give two shits about the political bullshit because they're pawns just like we are. We're told what the government wants us to know. They're told what their government wants them to know. Personally, I think 90% of the world strife is caused by a bunch of fucking rich people who just want to be richer.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that one.
Because it seems to me that the average person in the world, regardless of where you go, unless they've been subjected to years and years and years of propaganda, they just want to get by.
Yeah, that's true, man.
And I actually hope to be in Iran in September.
Why?
So, if you call me back in October, I may have further information for you.
Oh, yeah? You wouldn't mind if I called you back sometime?
No, not at all.
Oh, thank you very much. I know some people don't even, they just don't want to talk about this stuff.
I won't talk about some of the personal stuff I saw that day.
Right.
And as one guy in California drove me crazy, I have pictures.
Oh, my God. Did you talk to a guy named Craig Ranke?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I have pictures of the Pentagon, of the fireball, just as it's subsiding because I couldn't get my camera quick enough. And he wanted to see them.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him I couldn't find them. And I still haven't really looked for them, but I kind of know where they are. But what he doesn't understand is what he wants to see to validate or invalidate some stupid...
Well, he's the one that's going around saying that the plane flew north of the Citgo and flew over the Pentagon.
Yeah. I talked to him, and he said, well, I interviewed people who said they saw a gray plane. And I said, in what direction would they be looking from? And he said, well, they were north, or they were west of 395. And I said, okay. And I was east, and the sun was in my back. So they would have been looking into the sun. So when you look into the sun and you're looking at something silver, it looks fucking gray.
Hmm. Yeah, well, that makes sense. You obviously must have told him the same thing you told me, or?
Oh, yeah, and he didn't really want to hear it.
Because it doesn't fit his theory.
Exactly.
And he usually puts out all the his interviews out on the internet.
Yep.
But obviously he just cherry picks the ones that would kind of maybe sort of fit his theory after he's...
Well, mine's not on there except the statement to say that they've never been able to track me down.
What?
Go on his website and look for anything from me.
And they say that...
I even posted in their discussion board, and he removed it.
Really?
Hmm?
That's, you don't know how interesting that is. So you didn't have a problem with him recording you and telling your story to the world kind of deal?
I was actually out in California, and I was going to meet with him for an afternoon. And with his cameraman and just sit and talk with him. But he began to get so insistent and obsessed. And he doesn't understand that for me to go back there mentally,
yeah,
is slightly painful.
Yeah.
And I pay a price.
Yeah.
Like, people don't understand that for months afterwards, I never got more than 3 hours of sleep at a clip, and I always woke up to the same nightmare, that I was on my balcony looking at the plane, looking at me through the window, looking at me on my balcony. How's that for a mind fuck?
Wow, that's pretty wild.
Yep. And basically that stems from the fact that I watched almost 200 people vaporized.
Yeah.
Several children among them.
Like, so he said that, let me just get this straight one more time, I'm very sorry. He said that he never got a hold of you. When he did talk to you.
On the website, and I just found it because a friend of mine said, you got to check this out because I saw your name on there. And I went on there, and it basically said that after repeated attempts, nobody among his research group was able to find me. I don't know how that is, because the IRS and the post office can find me.
It only took me like 10 minutes to find you on the internet. Like,
yeah, and so I went to the website, I tried calling the number, I left the message, I went to the website, and I posted a response saying, I haven't disappeared. I'm right here where I've been. I was on the scene at 9/11. Afterwards, I ended up running a program for victims and survivors for 4 years. I know a fucking plane hit that building. I saw it. I saw the aftermath. I saw the results. And I can tell you that today, there are still people who work at the Pentagon that won't step foot in the building. They work at the annex in Crystal City.
Mm-hmm.
I could tell you horror stories about a woman in a wheelchair who couldn't find anybody to help her get the fuck out of the Pentagon.
Wow.
Because everybody was too busy running out.
Uh-huh.
Who can't be in a closed building. So when people like Craig, and I understand what he's trying to do, and I understand that he really is... like looking for the truth.
But I don't think he is, because he's definitely, he knows he's wrong. He's been shown he's wrong. We've been fighting about this for I don't know how long now.
Well,
that's why I've been calling people.
I thought you're going to fight with him forever.
No, but I mean, I don't like people putting out lies.
Well, unfortunately, pick up the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times or the Washington Post and you'll read them all day. but the fact of the matter is, he has a vision, and his vision just does not include logic or truth, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, obviously, he's not telling the truth because he says he never talked to you. And if he's deleting your posts off his forum, like...
Just one, not several, just one where I identified myself and said, if anybody wants me, you know, here's my email address, I'm right here.
And no one contact, or I guess the post was gone.
Well, he did.
Except for him, yeah. And did he...
What he wants from me is he wants those pictures.
Oh, yeah?
And he'll never see them.
No.
He'll never see them because as far as I'm concerned, that would be like taking pictures at a fucking funeral.
Yeah, yeah.
And showing them off to your friends.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense, yeah. Okay, well. So, are you said what you're going to Iran in September?
Yes.
So, you said you wouldn't mind if I called you back because he's probably going to, I don't know. You probably don't want to get involved in this little...
He finds out that I'm in the Middle East, he's going to get real curious about me again.
You'll be one of the agents of 9/11.
Who knows? Who cares? Life is short, and you never know where the ending is coming from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what 9/11 taught me.
Yeah.
Not just 9/11, but... My post office was one of the ones that was shut down because of the anthrax mailings.
Oh, yeah.
And I left the parking lot at Home Depot where the FBI analyst was shot not less than 5 minutes before she was shot. And I was coming from a softball game, and I was wearing a bright yellow T-shirt.
Wow. You just been all the wrong places at the wrong time.
Well, it certainly would seem that way. The fact of the matter is, I've been privy to some of the more infamous acts in recent history. And while I'm not grateful for it, it has provided an education.
Yeah, I can imagine. If you don't mind me asking, sir, why do you go to the Middle East?
Why do I go to the Middle East? Because these days what I specialize in is PTSD, substance abuse, and returning veterans.
Oh, post-traumatic disorder?
Stress disorder, yes.
Oh, okay, I see.
And I train therapists and counselors and doctors and nurses.
Mm-hmm.
And that type of research takes me to some places that, well, obviously the only places I'm going to be able to do any type of research are in places that have sustained some type of incident which is going to cause a PTS reaction.
Right, yeah. I guess that would be the main place to be right now.
Yep, and sometimes the only way I could, actually spend any time with Iranians, short of going through an extremely lengthy visa procedure, it's been like going on a year now trying to get a visa to get in there, because for some strange reason, I think they think I'm part of the CIA because they can't figure out why I want to go to their country. Will happen to be at a conference in the Middle East, in Turkey.
So when you go there in September, when you say you come back?
I'm hoping to be there the second week in September. I hope to be there for a week. Who can tell? The Iranians have a really neat way of, extending hospitality to people,
mm-hmm.
and they don't really want it, such as the three hikers.
Oh, I see. Okay, that's a crass sarcasm.
Yes. So I hope to be back after a week.
Mm-hmm.
I'm quite sure I will.
Well, if
they've got a tremendously bad substance abuse problem in Iran.
Oh yeah, with what, opium?
Yep. Hmm. Think about where they're located.
Well, that's why it was my first guess.
And it's costing their society billions upon billions upon billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not quite as backwards as people would have you think. They don't, like, execute addicts or anything like that. They actually treat them. Unlike some other countries in the Middle East where if you're caught selling drugs, they lop your hands off. But
that's a whole other story in itself, I guess.
Yes. But that's why I'm going over there. Hopefully, because I still don't have my visa.
Yeah.
And the window of opportunity is closing.
Yeah, it seems to be closing pretty quick.
Well, Mr. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, thank you very much for sharing it with me, sir, and thank you for spending so much time talking
to
me.
What do you do?
I'm a DJ.
Okay.
That's,
what type of music?
Mostly like hip hop and rap.
Okay.
Well, it's just what the crowd wants around here, I guess.
Where are you out of?
I live in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, Canada.
Oh, okay.
I'm right on the border with Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. They call us the Twin Cities.
Yep, I was just going to say I know somebody who grew up, and it's cold there.
Yeah, well, it's pretty nice right now, but usually it's pretty cold, yeah.
But, okay, I was just curious. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, don't buy into his bullshit too much, and don't even argue with him because you'll never win. And he's not going to listen to logic. He's still convinced that no plane hit the Pentagon. It was a missile or a bomb. You know, the only way he will ever understand is if he can somehow go back in time and be there.
I guess that's about the only way, yeah. Because, yeah, that's...
Because he's just not having it. And... You know what? You can take anything that I said and twist it to mean whatever you want.
Right.
And that's what he seems to do.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And God bless him, because he does it well.
Yeah, he's very good at what he does.
Yes, he is. And he's got himself cemented into a position that he cannot deviate from, because in order to deviate from it would pretty much, you know, negate everything he's done.
Yeah, he's too far in to say he's wrong, I guess.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I don't purport to be an expert on what happened in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
I understand fire science, and I understand physics from a firefighter's perspective. I understand construction techniques. I do believe that it was very possible that those towers came down the way they did, unless there was an extremely strong wind blowing.
Well, have you ever heard of a guy named Jim Hoffman from WTC7.net? He's done a lot of research on the Twin Towers, and he, I don't know, says there's no way they could have came down like that. Like, they exploded into dust, man. You could see, and steel beams and stuff were being shot hundreds of yards away, and I don't know.
Oh, yeah. That's like elastic bands. They'll only... Those beams below the fire floor, which were not weakened, were still steel beams. And because they're I-beams, they will flex. But they're gonna flex like rubber, and they're going to go back to their shape. That's part of why people use steel to build with. So, yeah, it doesn't surprise me those things were shooting...
It just from my eyes and my unexpert knowledge or whatever, just looking at those buildings come down, it's just like there's something wrong here. To me, anyway, I don't know.
My first impression was that it looked too clean. It did look like a demolition job. too many facts dissuade that. First of all, never before in history has a building that big undergone that type of trauma and failed. So there's really no yardstick to measure any of this against.
Well, I guess, just like they always have the examples of like the One Meridian Plaza, you know, the Windsor Hotel, like all these things, they just burn like torches for hours and hours, 18, 17 hours and stuff, these buildings, and, you know, they never collapsed.
But they weren't balloon-type construction. They were standard construction, meaning that the internal structure held the building up. And in the World Trade Centers, the external structure provided the framework for the building. That's the big difference.
Well, yeah, I talked to one guy. His name's Charlie Thornton. He's a structural engineer. He was telling me that there was, the Port Authority had no rules or regulations on how to build it, and they just built those. His excuse was that they built the tower so crappy that he wasn't surprised that they fell.
You know what? When I look at, I spend a lot of time in New York City. I live about 2.5 hours north in Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm.
I have very good friends down there. I do work for the fire department occasionally. I did building inspection for a long time, arson inspection, arson investigation. It's New York City. Most of the contractors came out of New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Watch The Sopranos. If those beams were specced out to be a certain percentage of one metal and a certain percentage of another metal for structural strength,
mm-hmm.
they probably were not. Maybe the first load came in that way, but I can pretty much guarantee you that halfway through that project, people were cutting corners like a son of a bitch to pad their profit margins.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I mean, that's just the nature of the world we live in today.
Yeah.
Look at Toyota. They knew value pricing their parts was a risky thing. Then they even knew that there were failures. But until it blew up in their face, they weren't going to do anything about it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's
that's called value pricing. Volkswagen went through something similar, and the vice president of North America got canned for it because of some stupid little window thing that they were making out of a white metal. He discovered that he could get them made out of plastic cheaper. But when thousands of people were driving down the road and their rear window just fell into the door, and they had to do a massive recall, yeah, you know what? Saving 15 cents per unit doesn't seem like such a good idea anymore. I can see the same thing happening with steel beams.
Mm-hmm.
There were hundreds of miles of steel beams in that building.
Yeah, and they shipped out all the steel to China before there could be a real investigation. That's kind of weird.
Well, not all of it. There's still plenty left.
A little bit, I guess. And don't you think it's weird that Larry Silverstein just acquired those buildings a few months before the attacks and had that billions of dollars insurance policy on them for a terrorist attack?
Well, between you and me, that tells me he had somebody on his staff that was on the balls, because they were a target. They'd been a target already. I mean, remember the failed bombing attempt.
Right.
That was on the hit parade for terrorists.
Yeah, but that was shown that the FBI encouraged him to do that, and the guy didn't want to do it, and he recorded the FBI.
See, I don't know about that. I also have heard the rumors about all the Israelis that were working in the building that didn't go to work that day, and everybody else. But what I do know is that in order for a controlled demolition to take that building down,
mm-hmm.
and this I know because I do know people that work in the demolition field. Not in anything as grand as New York City, but they told me that it would have taken almost 2 months of drilling and running debt cord to bring those towers down the way they came down.
Yeah, but like from what people say, it wasn't a normal controlled demolition because it happened from the top down or something.
Well, in when you're working in an inner city, that is controlled because you don't want it coming out at the bottom, because if one thing goes wrong, that building's not going to come straight down. It's going to topple.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, if that was a controlled demolition, the only way for it to come down would have been that type of construction, just the way it came down, because it fell in its own footprint, literally.
Right. Yeah. You know, well, the question I asked, like, the guys that you see on all the official story on the documentary channels and stuff like that, I call them and I ask them, like, one of the questions is like, well, now that from 9/11 we know, you know, buildings can fall in their footprint symmetrically like that because of fire weakening the steel, why do they even bother with demolitions when all they have to do is light the building on fire?
Unfortunately, because building construction varies. I'm not sure what answer they'd give you, but I'll give you a firefighter's answer. Because building construction varies, the Trade Center went up before they sprayed steel beams with insulation.
Mm-hmm.
You can go into any industrial area, right in your own town, and walk into a warehouse and look up, and you'll see unprotected steel beams.
Well, yeah, that's what one guy was telling me. He's a fire science teacher or something like that. And he's like, well, buildings collapse from fire all the time. He's like, have you ever went into a Home Depot and you see that?
Yep.
Like, well, that's different. That's different than a 110-story building.
You're right. But when you're dealing with the same materials, the physics is the same.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about all these, like, you must have heard of architects and engineers for 9/11?
Mm-hmm.
Like, all those guys, like, there's thousands of people that are questioning this. Like,
you know what? Everybody is entitled to an opinion.
Right.
And just like Craig Ranke, when people get cemented into a... How many people do you know that are capable of maintaining a healthy ego if they have to switch stances in the middle of an argument?
I don't understand.
Okay. How many people do you know who, in the middle of an argument, when new information is presented, can stop, reprocess, and say, oh, you know what? You're right. I'm wrong.
What, you mean something like cognitive dissonance or something?
Not really that, but just let's keep it simple. Just, you know, in a normal everyday conversation,
mm-hmm.
You're having a disagreement with somebody. Both people are cemented in. All of a sudden, some new information surfaces that clearly shows one side being correct. How many people, specifically in this country, do you think are capable of backing down, reassessing, and saying, oh, you know what, I was wrong?
Well, yeah, I understand. It's very hard for people to admit they're wrong, yeah.
Yes. So all these people who've been vocal, and some who've made quite a career out of this.
Yeah, that's what I find.
You really think that when push comes to shove, that they're really going to look at it from an honest perspective?
No, well, it's a good money-making scam, too, like these...
Oh, you're absolutely right on that one, my friend.
Some of these people tour around the country like rock stars, charging $20 for their talks and stuff like that.
Oh, yes.
And the
terrible thing is, I know several widows of New York firefighters who pretty much done the same thing.
Oh, yeah? Well, I talked to a firefighter, NYPD officer the other day who was... He was there as a rescue worker, and he confirmed to me that there was molten metal in the basements of the World Trade Center. He saw it with his own eyes.
What happens is, when all of that stuff falls, and it's still burning and smoldering, but it's covered by, you know, 50, 60 feet of concrete. It's like a huge Dutch oven.
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice they kept pouring water on the World Trade Center for like months afterwards?
Yeah, water, and they were bringing in truckloads of sand too, I noticed.
Yeah, to smother the fires.
Mm-hmm. And another strange thing, I'm sorry, I don't want to take up too much time here, but...
Wait, no, that's not that strange. Now, I don't know if they have peat bogs up in your neck of the woods.
No, I don't know what that is.
Okay, well, down here in New England, they have some peat bogs, and what it is the trees drop, you know, needles and leaves and stuff like that, and it just builds up and builds up and builds up, and it doesn't really break down all the way, but it compresses. And they have it a lot in Ireland. They actually cut it into bricks and they use it for firewood.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get a fire going in a peat bog, it'll burn for months.
Yeah.
Because you just can't get down to it.
Well, what I was going to say is, like, if those Trade Center fires were so hot in the North Tower before it comes down, you could see people standing in the hole waving. Like, if the fires were so hot and they were able to weaken the steel, how are those people be able to stand in the hole of the plane meet and be waving outside? Like, well, that was strange.
Well, part of that may be because if you'll notice that after the plane hit, you didn't see much in the way of paper or stuff like that coming out of those holes unless they were on a floor that was open on both sides.
Oh, this is the hole the plane made. They're standing in the plane hole.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's because oxygen, air was rushing in.
But the fire was dark smoke, so that means that the smoke was dark, black, so that means
right.
that it was oxygen starved.
Well, not necessarily oxygen starved, but you got to understand that when jet fuel burns,
mm-hmm.
it burns at such a high rate that it produces black smoke because it's consuming oxygen faster than the surrounding vicinity can replenish the oxygen. So what you're seeing is absolutely correct. But the reason why those people were able to stand there is because they were at the edge of the fire.
Yeah.
They weren't in the center of that floor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the heat would have been greatest. They were standing in front of open windows, which means that they were getting a constant flow of fresh air so that they could stand there and live. If they went 10 feet into that building,
mm-hmm.
back from the edge of that hole,
mm-hmm.
they probably would have died of carbon monoxide poisoning.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's why people were hanging out all the windows and busting windows open and stuff.
Exactly. And that's why people were jumping.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was the last rational thought. That was the last rational choice they had.
Mm-hmm. They could either sit there and die of suffocation or they could...
No, they weren't dying of suffocation at that point.
Mm-hmm.
They were dying of searing heat. Suffocation... they wouldn't have made the decision to jump. They would have fallen asleep.
Oh, yeah?
It was the searing heat that drove them to jump. Think about putting your hand on something hot.
Right. If you can't take your hand...
Do you make the decision to pull it back, or does your instinct pull your hand back?
That's a good question. It would have to be the instinct, yeah.
Okay. Because instinct will respond faster than your thought patterns.
Right, right, yeah, yeah.
That's what happened to those individuals that jumped.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't so much a rational thought. It wasn't as an option to smothering. It was instinct.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a totally unfortunate situation.
Yeah, that's called being between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, I guess that's a good way. Yeah, that's a good analogy.
It was. It, I mean, It's understandable. I would probably do the same thing. Having sustained third-degree burns and second-degree burns and first-degree burns on multiple occasions, I would probably choose the angel wings.
Yeah.
Than burning alive. Not by choice. I don't think anybody could have made a choice to stay in that building if they had access to a window.
Yeah.
They would have had to override millions of years of evolution.
Well, I'd be interested on your thoughts, like if you ever had time, if you checked out that guy's information.
Which one?
His name's Jim Hoffman, and he's got a
hold
website.
Hold on, let me write that down. Do you have my email?
No, I don't. I was going to ask you for it, actually.
S as in Sam.
Okay, I'll just grab a pen.
.com. See, Craig and his investigators, the crack team of investigators, couldn't even find me that way. I use it my name.
Well, it's funny that you'd talk to him and he says he didn't talk to you, and that whole thing you told me about that, posting on his forum, that post you posted and taking it down, that just...
Well, he made it sound like it didn't need to be up there because we actually talked. But the fact of the matter is, the people on that forum still think I'm one of the missing, much like the Kennedy witnesses.
So he did make it sound like he talked to you already and he didn't need to talk to you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But he never put up your information or anything like that?
No, of course not.
And then why would he delete your post? I mean, a person that saw stuff with his own eyes, I would think that would be like the best thing that could happen in the world is for somebody willing to talk.
Well.
And actually go on the internet.
Because I wasn't going along with what everybody else on that goofy website said, like those idiots from North Arlington who swear they saw a gray plane.
Yeah.
Go outside and look into the sun. And tell me if you can discern the difference between silver and gray.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I'm going to do is I'll email you some links if you ever get time. You could look at them or something, give me your opinion. I'd really like to be able to talk to you again. You're very knowledgeable about a lot of stuff.
Well, it's called being experienced, unfortunately. But sure, send it. As soon as I get a minute, I'll look at it. I'll at very least get back to you and let you know I looked at it.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll send that stuff right now. It'll come from sure_dj@hotmail.com.
Okay.
And like I said, thank you very much, sir, for spending this time talking to me. I really appreciate it. I hope to talk to you again sometime.
Not a problem. Have a good day.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.